Welcome back. It's a new day in 1180 WFYL, working for your liberty. You can call in at 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK. Join the conversation this morning or at 1-877-667-1180 abroad. That's 1-877-667-1180 abroad. Mike Levins here as we talk about Kansas governor signing an abortion law, which, according to the CNN article, is the first of its kind in the United States. Oh, I'm feeling an affinity for CNN this morning. We're using a lot of their material, it would seem. A CNN article: Kansas governor signs abortion law. Well, now this is an important step in the whole abortion debate across our nation. Let's read the beginning of it. A new Kansas law banning a common second-term abortion procedure is the first of its kind in the United States. The law was signed by Kansas Governor Sam Brownback on Tuesday, bans what it describes as dismemberment abortion, and defines as, quote, knowingly dismembering a living unborn child and extracting such unborn child one piece at a time from the uterus, unquote. Supporters of the measure described it as a groundbreaking step, which it is. Keep reading here. While opponents warned it was dangerous and among the most restrictive abortion laws in the country, the law does not spell out a specific time frame that limits when an abortion can occur, but it bans the dilation and evacuation abortion procedure commonly used during the second trimester of pregnancy. The law allows for the procedure if necessary to protect the life or health of the mother, according to a statement on Brownback's website. On Twitter, Brownback, a Republican, said he was proud to sign a law protecting life at its most vulnerable stage. Planned Parenthood advocates of Kansas and Mid-Missouri sharply criticized the move, which it described as the latest in a series of, quote, extreme political measures aimed at denying women access to health care and undermining their decision-making ability. And we've heard that before. Quote, Kansas is now not only the sole state with this atrocious law, it also now has more restrictions on abortion than any state in the U.S., the advocacy group said that in a Facebook post. Now, I think it is interesting, on a side note, that a portion of these quotes were taken from social media, Facebook, Twitter, and that is now a quote-worthy source. I just find that that's interesting because most times when we are talking about things that are said in the political sphere, it's all in person and an interview, but now it's through social media. Anyway, well, let's keep reading this article. Both sides appear to be prepared to take their battle over such measures to other states and to court. Carol Tobias, the president of National Right to Life, said in a statement that the Kansas law was the first of what her organization hopes will be many state laws. This law has the power to transform the landscape of abortion policy in the United States. And then we have Julie Burkhart, CEO of Wichita-based Southwind Women's Center, said on Twitter that the signing of the law marked a sad day for Kansas and the United States. Quote, this law puts women at risk and ties doctors' hands, she said. We'll continue to fight. And this is such a huge development in the whole abortion debate. And what you're seeing slowly but surely are the states in different ways challenging on their own terms things that in the federal sphere of law that have been deemed permissible. And you're seeing that in Kansas, you're seeing that in Indiana, you were seeing it in Indiana and Arkansas, and there is going to be backlash much more than what we have seen to the actual laws that were initially passed as far as Indiana and Arkansas. You're going to see a backlash to that, much larger from Christians, I believe, than what we have seen from those who are advocating against such a law. But you're seeing the states slowly but surely kind of test the waters and trying to really poke and prod to see how they can restore some of their rights that have been over encumbered by either government regulation or flat out taken away. And this is extremely important because it defines dismemberment abortion, and that's knowingly dismembering a living unborn child and extracting such unborn child one piece at a time from the uterus. And that is a common second-term abortion procedure. Why then are we in such an uproar? Because it's been so permissible for such, and honestly, if you think about it in our nation's history, it's not really that long of a time as far as this second-term abortion being permitted, this kind of second-term abortion. I don't know if you've ever seen a video of an abortion. Maybe, depending on who you are and what your experience is, and as far as being exposed to different kinds of media, because I remember that I got exposed to at least actually seeing an abortion through through an ultrasound, through YouTube, through other kinds of social media. But if you actually look at this kind of procedure, you kind of understand some of the language that they put into this law, knowingly dismembering a living unborn child. Not a fetus, a living, and it speaks volumes. Unborn child. But if you ever watch those videos, you actually see the, what many will say, fetus withdrawing back in pain. Depending on how far the fetus, and I use that with quotes, quote, you can't see them, but through the mic with quotations, you see the fetus rip back in pain and fear as instruments literally rip limbs. I mean, we would say it would be animal cruelty, or some would say it would be animal cruelty, if you dismembered an animal limb by limb and you could see its reaction, you could see its pain, and you just continue to do so. We would call that animal cruelty, but we stop here. You know, it's interesting to note that Old Testament practices, as far as the Bible, as far as actual idol worship that was prohibited by Scripture, one of those idols was called Molech. And one of the sacrifices to this god was that of children, babies. And that was to ensure a good crop or fertility. And how ironic is that? You're killing a child to ensure a good crop or fertility. But there is some kind of link, I believe. This is a spiritual issue. There are so many things where you look at this and try to reason it out logically as to why maybe we would treat an animal somewhat different than an unborn child. And we can't necessarily apply that reasoning and see some kind of logical consistency. And that's something that we often leave out of the public discourse, the spiritual application. And again, it's a new day from Christian perspective here. We can't. It's about the hearts and minds of people. The hearts and minds of people is ever important. That is ever important with us here in our nation, in everything that we do. We'll go ahead and take your calls. That's again at 610-539-TALK, 610-539-TALK, or 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. Stay right there. We'll be back right after this break. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the program. It's a new day on 1180 WFYL. You can call in at 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK or 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180. And on the phone we have with us right now to tell us about a very important event, we have Brad. Brad, you there?
I am here. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. How about you?
Great. It's been a great day. In fact, today celebrates my wife and I's 33rd anniversary of getting engaged, so we're all excited about that. It's been a lot of fun.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Well, congratulations. I am engaged myself and planning to be married this year.
Oh, my goodness. Good for you. Well, have I got an event for you?
Well, yeah. Well, why don't you go ahead and tell us about that a little bit this morning, and tell us a little bit of how you're involved. This is the Build Your Marriage Conference.
That's right. Yeah, my wife Heidi and I began the ministry called Build Your Marriage several years ago, and came out of a rough spot in our own marriage. And after finding healing and God's grace through that, we realized we don't want other couples to go through all the things that we did, and so we really wanted to do all we could to help people build their marriage. And so the Lord gave us this ministry called Build Your Marriage, and we are grateful to be coming to the conference center at Valley Forge on May 1st and 2nd. We'll be doing a Build Your Marriage conference. It's a Friday night and Saturday, three sessions. They've got a whole package deal there for couples, and we are super, super excited about what God's going to be doing at that conference.
Awesome. Now, we always talk on the program, when we were just talking about the issue specifically, and we're not going to go into this specifically, but about abortion. And
right, I've been
law,
listening, actually.
Yeah, a new law that has been signed, actually, by Kansas governor. And Can you just tell us, and again, not specifically having to do with abortion, but how the family is so important, because I've talked about this on the air too, in today's society, and that is really the core, and that is where we begin to develop the hearts and minds of individuals, which is what needs to be changed in our country as far as where we're going, where we're at. A lot of people necessarily not happy with that for many different reasons, but why building your marriage is the key, and how to do that.
Well, you and I both know that there are just devastated and broken lives, adults and children, as a result of broken families. And those broken families are a result of broken marriages. And we really can see a huge key for marriages and families in the future, whether they be blended families at this point or marriages that are just beginning, like yours will be, the importance of laying a godly, Christ-centered foundation for a marriage. And that's why we believe that, you know, what we're going to be talking about here is not just for people in crisis. Certainly that's important for, you know, folks in crisis to come. But this is even for people who are just wanting to tweak or turn up the dial a little bit on their marriage and make it stronger and healthier by talking about how they can build their marriage romantically or build their marriage spiritually or build a legacy through their marriage, which are the three topics we're going to be talking about. One of the keys that we believe really is important is we'll talk about it and build your marriage spiritually is just praying together. 95% of Christian couples don't even pray together. And we're just going to give some very practical, simple tools for how to even do that. The statistics are amazing because, you know, while generally one out of every two couples gets divorced somewhere in the course of a marriage, the couples who pray together, it's one out of every 10,000. And
wow.
So when we talk about some of the things we're going to talk about here at this marriage, it's about things that can strengthen and protect your marriage at the Build Your Marriage Conference. So we're about not just the marriages, but as you said, Mike, you're right on, spot on with this. about protecting and building families in the process.
And that's where it all starts. We've even talked about on the show that, and we've linked crime rates, increased crime rates, drug abuse, sexual, not sexual abuse, but promiscuity, I guess you could say, right, increasing in either single-parent households or divorced households. You could see it statistically. Reports and scientific studies have been done that confirm this time and time again. And the family starts with marriage. You can't have a family without some kind of bond. And the best way to do that is the bond that God established through marriage.
That's exactly right. And, you know, one of the best investments, I think, well, I believe any couple can make, not only for their, on behalf of their family, not only for themselves in their marriage, but for their families, is by even going, whether it's the Build Your Marriage Conference or something else, by making the investment of time and the investment, just a small investment financially, of getting away and pouring into the marriage. Getting away like this can actually take you months ahead relationally just by investing 24 hours in a concentrated time like this. And it protects your children as well. I mean, the consequences of not doing so are huge. So I really appreciate just the opportunity even to, you know, encourage couples to invest in their marriages. And hopefully, if it works in their schedule and they're able to do it, to come to the Build Your Marriage Conference on May 1st and 2nd at the Conference Center at Valley Forge.
Now, some people listening may think, well, why do I need to do that? Or they may not understand when you say, you know, build your marriage. They go, well, what am I doing? And I mean, you tell me that marriage is an institution. Well, how do I build it necessarily? Could you just elaborate, kind of explain that idea a little bit more to our listeners?
You know, I think sometimes we get married and we think, you know, we put all the effort into the wedding, and then we get married and life catches up to us. And we get caught up in our work, and we get caught up in family and kids and activities and just the busyness mm-hmm. of life, maintaining Facebook, whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And we have more intentionality in so many things, like business plans and financial plans or whatever, and we don't have intentionality about the most important relationship on earth that we have, and that's with our spouse. And so this is really about taking intentional steps and weaving it into really the DNA of a marriage so that it becomes strong. You know, a cord of three strands is not easily broken. And with Christ at the center of the marriage, you know, you are not going to be easily broken apart, but you've got to be intentional about that. And that's more than just going to church. You know, that's great. Now, obviously, I'm a pastor, so I'm all for that. But this is about what do you do day in and day out to really focus in on your spouse and so that you both are on the same page. That kind of unity is so desperately needed. And you and I both know, Mike, and in your work and in our work, we see, you know, Christian marriages that are falling apart because they've lacked the attentiveness and intentionality toward their marriage.
And this is even for people who are not Christians, because the idea behind Christ and Him coming, the Son of God, God incarnate, He came to offer Himself. It's a selflessness that He came to offer Himself for sinners, that we can be saved from sin. And that really works well in a marriage. Marriage is modeled after the Christian idea of Christ and the church being united when He returns one day. So people who are married who are not even Christians, you'll find that. And maybe you're listening right now, and maybe this has some of your ear because maybe you're going through a tough spot. I would encourage you to come to this conference and don't feel out of place if you're not a Christian, because you know what? Christianity, Jesus, is not for just the church. It's for the world. And God wants you to come and wants you to embrace His Son, Jesus, and you'll find that these principles that Jesus lined for us, not just in marriage, but in our day-to-day lives, being selfless and doing that out of love towards one another, really keep a marriage together. And that you'll find it will probably expand past your marriage, and that Jesus is really the only way, the truth, and the life. So we've only got about 40 seconds left, but Brad, could you just tell me a little bit more? It's going to be May 1st and 2nd. Where
That's
and
right.
how can they get in contact?
Yeah, it's at the Conference Center at Valley Forge. Just go to valleyforge.edu. You can scroll down. It's on the homepage, or valleyforge.edu/marriage, and you're able to find out all the additional information there. It's a package deal. It includes your housing, your food, the whole thing, and it's a wonderful opportunity.
And I encourage you, especially if you're not even Christian, to go. Go, because I think that you'll find something that will apply to more than just your marriage. We got to head to a break, but we'll be back on It's a New Day, 1180 WFYL. TV at Oklahoma KFC played a sex scene while family dined. Oh, what is happening? An Oklahoma man captured video of what appeared to be a pornographic film playing on a TV at a KFC restaurant while he was dining with his family. That's gotta make your dinner interesting. Or turn some stomachs. Gerald Whalen's video shot inside the KFC restaurant in Edmond about 9:30 p.m. Thursday shows what he believed to be a pornographic film playing on a KFC television while he was dining with his wife, April, and their twin 6-year-old sons. I looked up from my plate and we're talking full nudity, he said to KOCO TV. Apparently it was a sexually explicit scene from the Racy Stars show Outlander. It was initially believed to be a pornographic film, but just one of those, you know, scenes that you cover your children's eyes with, airing on one of, I guess, Stars' staple shows. I'm really shocked that they actually had Stars at KFC. He went and got the manager. The manager came running out and flipped the TV off really quick. I think she actually unplugged it. Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. That's not good PR. KFC addressed the incident in a statement. Quote, "We apologize for any negative dining experience." Yes. Yes, I do not want to be subjected to that kind of viewing while eating my dinner. That may have occurred as a result of the restaurant's TV being changed without awareness or permission to a station showing inappropriate content. The company said it is, quote, taking measures to ensure programming like this cannot be accessed in the future. And let us hope so. There's a similar incident at McDonald's in Switzerland in December when a pornographic program was shown on at least one of the restaurant's TVs. The eatery said the program was shown by accident as it was aired on a German sports channel. And the restaurant's TVs are usually set to sports networks. Your daily facepalm for the day. Your only contender for the daily facepalm. So we do have a winner. Thank you very much for playing today on the daily facepalm on It's a New Day, 1180 WFYL. Now to things a little bit more serious. We have with us for our daily Ukrainian update, we have with us on the phone right now Irene Mazur for our daily Ukrainian update for information that is happening inside the country, what you need to know about as far as the situation developing in Ukraine. Irene, are you there this morning?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Good, good. Bringing you right in the middle of the program this morning. So thanks for joining us. So tell us, I'm sure that a lot has happened in Ukraine that is not necessarily being reported in the mainstream news right now, which our listeners would be privy to hear.
Well, yes, of course, I will tell you because Ukraine is not on the first pages of newspapers at this point. So far, situation in Ukraine is not critical, but still it remains to be very tense, especially in the eastern Ukraine. Right now, there is not such a heavy fighting like it was in February or beginning of March. However, there are still attacks on the same cities in the eastern Ukraine. And the Russian-backed separatists, they changed their tactic a little bit. And now they engage into a terror of Ukrainian cities. For example, on April 2nd, there was a bomb explosion in the downtown of Kyiv. No casualties, of course, were reported, but there was a destruction of the building and the houses surrounding. The same bomb explosion happened in Kharkiv. Again, it's a major city in the eastern Ukraine. Terrible situation is in Odessa, which is a major port in the southern Ukraine. And totally, the Secret Service of Ukraine counted about 10 attacks, bomb attacks on Odessa. So local population is terrorized. People are scared because they don't understand and they don't know what will happen tomorrow. The major politicians and I would say political experts, they predict escalation of violence very soon, especially after the celebration of a famous May parade in Moscow on May 9th. And the general situation with humanitarian situation is also not great because at this point we have, according to the UN statistic, about 5 million people affected in the war in Ukraine. And 1.7 million people, of those people are children. And about even more than 1 million people are officially internally displaced people as the result of the Russian aggression. So you can understand that people survived a harsh winter. Right now it's a spring. A lot of them, they don't know how, they don't have housing, they don't have proper care, they don't have proper proper needs. And Ukraine trying to cope with the situation as much as possible. A very disturbing report is that at least 42 children have been killed and about 109 injured by landmines and unexploded ordnance in the Donetsk and Luhansk regions of the eastern Ukraine since March last year. So it is also very sad and very disturbing.
My goodness.
News, exactly.
Well, Irene, could you for our listeners, could you just tell them what exactly you're doing to be privy to this information? I know you work closely with the UN, and you are a native-born Ukrainian yourself, so you're also close with people who are on the ground in Ukraine. Could you just go ahead and tell our listeners a little bit about that and how you may get some of this information?
Yes, I have a privilege to live in the United States for the last 14 years. I'm already a naturalized American citizen, but I'm still closely connected with Ukraine, where I was born. I am an advisor to the United Missions, to the permanent mission of Ukraine in the United Missions on the public affairs. And I'm also I'm also director of advocacy information program of the Ukrainian Federation of America. Simply through my knowledge and through my extensive monitoring of the situation in Ukraine, I am basically on a daily basis monitor what is going on. I read reports. I talk to people. I talk to people in Ukraine. I talk to experts and politicians here. And I'm trying to provide you here with objective analysis what is going on there. And yes, I am subjective perhaps in my personal opinion, but I'm trying to reflect as much objectively as I can.
Sure, and what people are really looking for in this event, this conflict, is that they're looking for information on the ground which they could really latch onto and that's reliable, and you provide that here for us. So thank you for being on the program and providing us with
the
information.
Thank you for having me. Thank you.
It's our pleasure. It really is. So tell me a little bit about the Minsk agreement, because isn't that still in effect? The Minsk ceasefire?
Apparently there were two Minsk agreements. However, not the first one, not the second, are executed and complied with by Russia or Russian-supported separatists in Ukraine. It is clear to the entire world that Russia has no intentions to uphold its legal obligations. In the first place, Russia violated the international law and order. And the entire circus that Putin provides in the political arena, it has no credibility anymore. You know, they will never uphold to legal obligations which they had in the first place. Russia was one of the countries who signed who were guarantors of Ukrainian independence. After the collapse of the Soviet Union, Ukraine was one of the largest countries in Europe with a really huge nuclear arsenal. And Ukraine voluntarily gave up that nuclear weapons. Countries like United States, Ireland, England, and Russia, they signed a Budapest memorandum where they stated that they guarantee they're guarantors of Ukrainian independence and sovereignty. So how ironic it is that right now, a year ago, Russia actually launched into a military aggression against Ukraine, annexed part of its territory, and during the entire year, openly and really brutally violating Ukrainian land and breaking any possible international law and orders, destroying the work of the United Nations. At this point, the Security Council is completely toothless organization because Russia, obviously, as a permanent member of the Council, blocks every possible decision. I won't even comment on the behavior of the Russian representative in the Security Council because it just lacks complete courtesy and professionalism. Everybody can watch those meetings of the Security Council online.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, if you would look into Russia during the past 20 years, it engaged in two several wars against its neighbors. It's terrorizing smaller nations.
It is.
It engages in terrible persecution.
And when you have something like a permanent position on the UN Security Council, it's kind of hard to be stood up to, you know, when you don't have anything as far as regarding the UN. And we're going to have to head to a break, but I mean, we're going to continue the conversation with you on It's a New Day. Go ahead, join us in the conversation, 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK. If you have a question for Irene or want your opinion to be heard, we'll be back in just a moment. Welcome back to 1180 WFYL. It's a new day. Call in at 610-539-TALK. That's 610-539-TALK or 1-877-667-1180. That's 1-877-667-1180 abroad. We have on the phone with us Irene Mazur, an advisor to the United Nations on Ukraine and also working with Ukrainians on the ground, getting updates on the situation in Ukraine, and that's what we're all talking about today in our daily Ukrainian update. Irene, thank you for joining us back on the air for this next segment.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about, we're talking about Russia, and how they are involved. It's not just Ukrainians who are merely separatists who may be accused of some of these crimes or different things like kidnapping, and the humanitarian crisis is growing in Ukraine, and we're going to talk about that as well. But tell me a little bit about the evidence for Russia as a nation being involved on the ground in Ukraine.
Well, you see, I always try to distinguish Russia as a nation, Russia as a country in the political arena, because obviously I cannot accuse all the Russians to be guilty of the crimes committed by their country, obviously. But you see, the situation in Ukraine didn't actually happen just over the last year. In order to conduct such an operation and such an offense and such an invasion, I would say, it was prepared over a long period of time. And the evidence which was actually provided, information provided by another country, by Poland, by Baltic countries, by all kind of reports from Ukraine, they do show that Russia prepared for this kind of aggression over the period of last 10 years. Basically, what they did, they infiltrated their agents within the Ukrainian government. For example, the Secret Service of Ukraine was reported that there are spies and there are people who are actively hired and supported by Russia, and they were placed in different kind of, in all kind of authorities of Ukrainian government. A lot of members of the former Ukrainian parliament, they so-called from party of regions, they were financially supported by Russia. People in Crimea and people in the eastern Ukraine, mostly it's the older people who belong to the Communist Party. They were contacted over a few years ago in order to form a special social groups. But the social groups were kind of brainwashed. and prepared for the idea of reuniting with Russia, of sort of self-determination in the as a part of the Russia. And right now, when we talk about the military invasion, obviously, if you will think that people who have simply ideas of separation, well, they cannot fight with those ideas. Right now, those so-called Russian separatists, for over the year, they have money, they have modern weapons, and the weapons are actually Russian weapons.
Mm-hmm. One of the weapons I think that is most notable is the T-90 tank.
Yes.
That's appeared in many, many different media photos being
yes.
used by the separatists, which...
And missile systems and all kind of heavy artillery and mm-hmm. All kind of military devices, which simply cannot just appear and be maintained by the separatist ideas. Plus, even Pentagon reported on the many, many instances, I would say, almost on the daily basis of infiltration of Russian troops and military vehicles, armored vehicles, through the Ukrainian and Russian border, which would Russian would always claim that they some kind of lost and crossed the line accidentally. Don't forget about that plane which was shot down, Malaysian airplane, and the investigations. Basically, there are means to investigate the trajectory of the missile that hit that plane. I know that there are a lot of independent reports which actually point that the missile was fired from the direction of the Russian territory or from the area controlled by Russian-supported separatists.
And
so,
with some kind of a conflict like this, with such an embroiled conflict like the one we are seeing on a day-to-day basis, even though we do have various pieces of international agreements. I don't know if they could be called necessarily international law, but agreements to which even Russia has signed to as a nation.
Exactly.
Being violated
exactly.
day after
and,
day.
I would say that Russia actually constantly disregards any kind of those agreements. And if you know, it engages in violation of international law on a constant basis. If you will think about it, the case of, for example, the case of Ukrainian pilot Nadiya Savchenko and other Ukrainians who were kidnapped by Russian authorities and took to Russia, tried and already convicted to Russian prisons. In international law, it is called internationally sponsored abduction. And nobody talks about this kind of crime. Savchenko is not tried yet. She is still detained. She was on the incomplete hunger strike for a few months, and right now she resumed to consume some water and some chicken stock, as I understand, because she has about 95 pounds or so left.
My goodness.
Yes, but she is in bad condition, and Russian authorities declined to release her, although all kind of political negotiations were took place about the subject. But it's not only Savchenko alone. There are about 25 or 26 cases of other Ukrainians who are officially, that Ukraine officially announced that they are in Russian prisons, but we don't even know how many hundreds of Ukrainians are kept, how many of them were kidnapped and kept in the Russian prisons at this point.
And this is part of the humanitarian crisis that you were
exactly,
talking about going
exactly.
on there as well.
And Russia engages in the same activity like it was under Stalin, because even the same Savchenko, she was the subject of mental evaluation. She was put into the mental institution. And you can just imagine how it is. It is not a simple or pleasant process to be placed in the mental institution
mm-hmm.
in Russia.
And the fact that they're being held in Russian prisons, when this is a conflict that Russia self-purportedly is not involved in.
Exactly.
The evidence
exactly.
is really stacking up against Russia not being involved, it's almost getting to the point where no one is really believing them anymore when you know, maybe some of their state media or something like that says that they're not involved at all. The evidence is overwhelming.
It is overwhelming, and I'm actually very happy about the job that Samantha Power, the American ambassador at the UN, is doing, because her reports are extremely precise, extremely on the point, and exactly what we are discussing right now, she reflects in her report, because she says, at this point, we cannot even believe anything what Russia says or what they state. Unfortunately, we have to deal with a huge country in the political arena, with the heavier, I would say, sort of heavy player, and we have to deal with that player. And unfortunately, Ukraine is the only country that stands between the Russia and between the West. And as I always say, it's not a matter only about Ukraine. It's a matter of the world political balance. I don't want to see us at the beginning of some kind of crisis, which we had in the 39 of the last century. So,
and Russia is trying to grow an influence. They are trying, and one of the ways that they are doing that is restoring land that they see as lost.
Yes.
From
and
the
which
former
is amazing
Soviet
for
Union.
Me, it's actually to see the repeat of the history.
Irene, I'm sorry to cut you off, but we've got to end the program. It was wonderful having you on, but we'll see you tomorrow.
You so much.
Thank
right.
you. Take
Thank
care.
You.
On
Have a
it's
good
a new day.
Day.
WFYL.
Hello,
bye
this
bye.
Is Paul.